Harry the Hammer with further review by Housecrafters. Housecrafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes exterior home services like roofing, siding, home additions, and much more. Call 716-646-NAIL.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Further Review Podcast for the Buffalo News. I'm Jay Skirsky, joined by Perrin Keyes. Perrin, big Bills victory in Foxborough, 35-31 over the New England Patriots, closing the gap in the AFC East division race, and I think more importantly, sending a message to the rest of the conference that the Buffalo Bills are still very much for real in the race to represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. We will obviously get into that playoff race in more depth later in the show, but as we so often do, I think we have to start the show talking about number 17, the best football player on the planet, in my mind, the reigning MVP, who I think showed why, again, in the second half against New England. What were your impressions, Perrin, of watching another kind of virtuoso performance from Josh Allen?
Who is this guy, Josh Allen? Is that the number 17 you're talking about? Yes, Josh Allen. This guy, he evidently is good at football. I'm going to read the final stat line. We'll start with that. I'll do that for a reason. 19 of 28, 193 passing yards, 3 touchdowns. He also rushes for 48 yards on 11 carries. These are not numbers. If you're going to take Josh Allen and compare him to, well, we'll compare him for the moment to the NFC front runner, who is Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford's numbers are far better than Josh Allen's, just the hard numbers. Stafford is second in the NFL, 3,700 yards, 3,722, 37 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. That's incredible. He's having an incredible year at 37 years old. What else can you say about the guy? And so if you go just numbers for numbers, there's no comparison, frankly. Stafford is well ahead, and he's well ahead in the MVP race. But Josh Allen, if you look at those numbers, they clearly don't jump off the page. But that's one of those things where you just have to see what the guy's doing. And obviously, if you're in Western New York, if you're listening to this podcast, watching this podcast on YouTube or BuffaloNews.com, you know that you know what you know. You know what you saw on Sunday, and that is he plays like the best player in football. And the Bills don't win, obviously, it goes without saying. They don't win without Josh Allen. And so many of the things that we hear from you guys as reporting in the locker room, Jay, you, Lance Lysowski, Catherine Fitzgerald, and the rest of the Western New York media, how many players come out of that locker room saying, look, we know we were down 21 points. We know we were down 17 points at halftime. We know we were down start the third quarter. But we've got number 17. And that's some version of that keeps on getting repeated over and over and over again, and all these wins, and most of these wins lately certainly have come as a result of the Bills having come from behind, which is a whole other issue. I think the last time the Bills scored first and played with a lead was the Kansas City game. And if I go, give me 10 seconds, I'm sorry, if I go to the Bills schedule, I believe that was on November 2nd. I may be getting that wrong because I don't have it quite in front of me. But anyway, you're talking about a long time. The Bills have not played with a lead to start out the game. And so anyway, long story short, he's got complete command of the offense. Don't just look at what he did. He did throw downfield a little bit. They didn't complete some of those passes. What the deep one to Shakir got a pass interference. The one to in the first quarter, the first play from scrimmage to Brandon Cooks was not completed, but that was more of a case, obviously, of Cooks bobbling it on its way out of bounds. But no matter how you slice it, he's in command of that offense. They believe in him, and God only knows how many times he got them into a good play or made a great play because of his improvisational skills, and so on and so on and so on. If we want to go all the way back to the MVP race, Josh Allen was at plus 3,000 for all you degenerates out there. He was at plus 3,000 in getting the fourth best odds at most sports books as of 2 weeks ago. Yesterday, going into the day, he was plus 1,400 at most books. I happened to be watching this in real time, just sort of out of curiosity. As the game ended, he dropped to plus 700, then dropped to plus 600, dropped to plus 550, and he's now at plus 500, getting the third best odds, just ahead of Drake May, or excuse me, just behind Drake May, who dropped to plus 400. Matthew Stafford is still the front runner, but one way or the other, this was a reminder to the rest of the football watching world, whether you're on a team or a fan of the NFL. Oh, we better keep an eye on this guy who's wearing number 17, as you put it, Jay, and the Buffalo Bills as a whole, because no lead is safe. And despite that run defense, which we'll talk about in a moment, they got to, everybody's got a plan for this guy. Everybody's got to account for this guy. The Bills are never out of it.
Yeah, and we also have to mention, too, Perrin, his running mate, right? Kind of the Robin to his Batman, if you will, and that's James Cook. You know, 22 carries, 107 yards, two touchdowns, another touchdown receiving, part of two catches for 4 yards in that regard. Cook is having an all-time season for the Bills. He is on his way to, I think he's going to probably be number three all-time in single-season rushing yards. He's going to move past Thurman Thomas probably next game. He'll go past one of OJ's seasons. He's not going to catch OJ's two best years, but he's going to top 1,500 yards. The only running back in history for the Bills who has done that is OJ Simpson. So, and it's funny that you mention, you know, Catherine and Lance and I were talking after the game. That was the quietest 107-yard game that I can remember James Cook having. You look up and the guy's over 100 yards, you know. The long run was only 12 yards. So he wasn't getting out, you know, Travion Henderson style, going for 50-yard touchdowns, but it was just relentless. He averages 4.9 a carry, good but not great, and he just wears him down. He is the definition of a do-it-all running back in today's NFL. He can catch passes, as we saw. He can make tough yards between the tackles. He does have breakaway speed, as we've seen several times, even if it wasn't as much on display yesterday. So, you know, that is a deadly combination right now, and Batman and Robin is the best analogy I can come up with for the way that Cook and Allen are playing. It's really tough to stop one of them. It's darn near impossible at times to stop both of them. And, you know, you look at the results offensively the last couple of weeks against New England, the week prior against Cincinnati. I mean, this is an offense that it's kind of a pick your poison, and defensive coordinators are struggling to come up with answers.
You all mentioned it, could not have worded it better. That was a quiet, that's as quiet a dominant rushing performance as a player could have. But the Bills, of course, don't win without him either. Receiving touchdown, as you mentioned, he's made himself a complete back, just as you said. Catching the ball out of the backfield, he's light on his feet. He's surprisingly punishing, for lack of a better way to put it, given that he's not a big, you know, 260-pound bulldozer. But he's also light on his feet. He makes the extra effort, as we've seen time and again. Sometimes it gets him in trouble, but a lot of times the Bills are the benefactor of it. So, no, there's no doubt about that. And, Jay, I think to take nothing away from Allen and Cook, I think you have to give a lot of credit to give credit where credit's due, to Joe Brady calling a pretty good game, a couple of, you know, questionable calls notwithstanding, as is always the case if you're a coach, but also Aaron Kromer in the offensive line. You know, this is, you can make an argument that these guys are the best unit in football, and they've proven it time and again. It's certainly the best run blocking unit in football. And there's a reason the Bills start with the run and do everything off of that. It's because that's what they're so exceptional at. And then you put the ball in the hands of number 17 and great things happen. So they're, as we sit here now, they're never out of it. It's not a great way to fly if you can't stop somebody, especially out of the gate, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but they're never out of it, and Sunday's game was just more proof of it.
Harry the Hammer goes to work.
Harry the Hammer here from House Crafters, and I am one happy hammer. We just finished this addition and kitchen, and it's beautiful. Look at this place. It's gorgeous. If you have a remodeling project in mind, a kitchen, bathroom, or mother-in-law apartment, one call really does do it all at House Crafters. For a free estimate, call House Crafters at 646-NAIL.
So we've discussed many of the great things that came out of Sunday's game, Jay. Notably the comeback and Josh Allen and James Cook and a tremendous offensive line. Let's talk about that run defense for a little bit, shall we? Let's discuss first and foremost, the Bills have to come all the way back. They're down 21-0, and I'm sorry if you listen. You know, it's easy to say this now. Oh, sure. You know, I believe the Bills are going to come back. I don't know that anybody would have said that. They're down 21-0 with about 6 minutes to go in the second quarter after Travion Henderson, the great rookie from Ohio State, rips off a 52-yard run almost untouched. And everything is going right for the Patriots, starting with the ground game. They come all the way back. The Bills come all the way back. They actually take the lead. And then, well, it lasts for one play. Travion Henderson breaks off another 65-yard rush. And you're saying to yourself, he did that on a stretch play, basically one cut, and he's gone. And I'm not so sure. You probably have a better read on this, Jay, but it's sure for everything looked on the television replay that he was untouched one way or the other. No matter how you slice it, 246 yards on the ground for the New England Patriots. Henderson himself goes for 148 on a mere 14 carries. Ramondre Stevenson did just fine starting off the game. We said the Bills are never out of it, and that's true. But my goodness, if you're Sean McDermott and the rest of the coaching staff and the team, you'd like to not play from behind and so far behind. And as we get down the road into this cold weather, into the playoffs, I'm not saying, Jay, that you've got to have the best defense in the NFL, but you better have something better than what the Bills put on display, particularly in the first half.
Yeah, without question. I mean, it's tough living, right? You're giving up that many yards on the ground. 9.8 per carry is an absurd number. 4 rushing touchdowns in a game is an absurd number. The Bills have now given up 23 rushing touchdowns this season. That leads the NFL. That is not a category you want to lead the NFL in, as it, you know, kind of goes without saying. Takeaways, you know, you look at this game, they get a forced fumble by Matt Milano. They get an interception from Trey White, which actually was kind of an arm punt. You could argue that maybe Trey White would have been better off knocking it down. You're never going to fault a guy for making a play on the ball. But the point there is that is really tough. That is really, really tough living. And we have to give the defense credit, right? The second half was a lot better with, you know, one glaring exception to that, as you mentioned, the 65-yard run. How many times is a team going to, you know, break off 250 plus yards, you know, rushing touchdowns in a game? Probably not too often, but, you know, the larger point there is that spotting a team, a 21-0 lead and a 24-7 halftime lead, is making things exceptionally difficult on Josh Allen. You don't want to ask him to continually have to be Superman, right? And so this defense has to find a way to be passable. It has to be mediocre at best. It was not mediocre in the first half. It was embarrassing is the right word for that defense in the first half. And they know it, you know, and you know, credit them, the players, the coaching staff as well, for making, you know, the necessary adjustments, for coming out, putting together a better halftime performance. But it feels for all the world like this team is playing with fire, you know, and when you are going into, you know, big time games, and obviously that's what they're going to be going into in January, to be that behind the eight ball when the pressure is ratcheted up even more, when the home crowd is going to be into it, you know, let's face it, they're probably going to be on the road potentially for the entire playoffs, because the division is still sort of there for the taking for New England, and we can get into that a little bit later too. But the run defense has got to improve. It's never going to be good. I think we can safely say that, but it's got to be able to give the team a little bit more of a chance to find itself. And, you know, this is something we'll talk about in the next segment. You know, how do you weigh the adjustments that this coaching staff has clearly been capable of making time and again this season versus, you know, the inability to start games better? And Sean McDermott says all the time that it starts up front. You know, he talks about winning the battle of the line of scrimmage. You pointed out earlier that the offensive line, more often than not this season, and really for the last couple of years, has done that. I can't say the same about this Bills defensive line. They have not won the battle of the line of scrimmage frequently enough. You know, I look yesterday and Drake May goes for 4 carries, 43 yards, along a 17, 2 rushing touchdowns. You know, not all of those are designed runs. A couple of them were, especially the touchdown runs, but Larry Ogunjobi's got him in his arms and he gets free and it's a 17-yard scramble. Those are the types of plays that can't happen. That's execution. That's on the players. They were in position. You know, Travion Henderson's 65-yard run, they were in position. That play should have been bottled up. Somebody doesn't contain on the edge. You know, you talk about needing all 11 guys to defend the run. Well, that's exactly the example there, because 9 or 10 of those guys were in the right position. You take a poor pursuit angle at the begin or at the end of the play. You don't hold contain on the edge. He gets outside, and so you're looking at maybe 9 guys do the job the right way. 2 don't. Well, that can't be. It does take all 11 to defend the run properly, and they didn't do it often enough yesterday. And I think the best way that I can put it is that they're playing with fire if they don't get that issue at least moderately improved here over the final 3 weeks, and then, of course, more importantly, heading into the playoffs. All right, Perrin, and it's time to have a conversation about the head coach. If you were on Twitter, we'll use the correct term. If you were on X during the game and following along with Bills fans, you were likely seeing the same thing that I was seeing as I'm trying to kind of document the game, and that is just a ton of vitriol for the head coach in the first half of that football game. And honestly, it's a little bit tiring, I'm not going to lie. Every single time something goes wrong, it's immediately fire the head coach. And I get it. That being said, and I think I've been at times critical of Sean McDermott and at times understanding that he's the best coach they've had since Marv Levy. And, you know, fans have to remember where things were before he arrived. That first half was one to forget for Sean McDermott. You know, it started early on the first possession. That challenge flag has got to come out. It's a 30-yard completion. I understand that he didn't get a good look at it, right? He only saw what was on the Jumbotron in the stadium. The Patriots are going fast. You've got to make a decision. This is a coach who has routinely used defensive timeouts, has shown he doesn't have an issue using timeouts on defense. To me, it's worth a challenge there. If there's any question that that's an incompletion, it goes from the ball in New England in Buffalo territory in scoring range for the Patriots to a punt. And so I think that's a worthwhile challenge flag to throw. You also question, you've got an officiating liaison on your staff in John Perry. Yeah, maybe he didn't get a look at it in the booth because he didn't have a replay to go off of either. But, you know, there's got to be some feedback there in terms of that's a worthwhile challenge, even if it doesn't go our way early in this game. We'll sacrifice the timeout for the potential of a change in possession. I just wrote, timing not looking real good, how good Sean McDermott has been, by and large, on fourth downs this season. You know, he has gone for it at a top 5 rate in terms of when analytics suggest, in terms of win probability, going for it is the right move. Well, 4th and 5, what happens? He punts. Not a good decision. 3.4 percentage win probability points lost by that decision. Very surprised to see that, honestly. 4th and 8 from the New England 41, he also punts. Now, I understand 8 yards is a little bit longer, but you're at the 41-yard line there. And so, you know, these are issues and these are moments in big games that we have seen Sean McDermott struggle before in. And I think it was alarming to see him struggle the way that he did in the first half. The flip side of that, and I know I'm, you know, a little bit long-winded here, but the flip side of that is that where do you attribute the credit to these getting, you know, the issues getting fixed in the second half, right? The halftime adjustments, if you want to call them that. They're not just halftime adjustments. I've written about halftime adjustments before. It's a misconception. They got enough time to go to the bathroom and grab something to eat and drink a water, and then they're back on the field. These adjustments are happening during games as much as they are at halftime. And the coaching staff, to their credit, defensively especially, because it was bad in the first half, makes those adjustments. So how do you weigh that, right? How do you weigh giving McDermott the proper amount of credit while also understanding that the first half of that football game was unacceptable from a coaching perspective?
Jay, it's a great debate, for lack of a better way to put it. It's a great sort of juxtaposition. There's a lot to unpack there. I'll start by just saying, you know, let's take this short term and long term with Sean McDermott. And what I mean by that is in game versus also sort of development and coaching and improving the players on your roster and things of that nature. Short term, listen, I don't think there's anybody who would argue that the Bills in general, including the coaching staff, including the head coach, had a horrible first half. They didn't get off the bus, to use a football cliche. They did not get off the bus. They were not ready. And you have to put some of that on the coaching staff, too. There's just no doubt about that. There's no, you know, the game plan wasn't what it needed to be, and or the execution wasn't what it needed to be. It started off bad. Long term, you want to take a look at Sean McDermott and say, you know, there are players that defense, let's start with the defense. The defense, this seems like a long time ago, but we were certainly talking during one part of this season about how bad the secondary was. Well, secondary looks pretty doggone good right now. The Bills have played far, far better against them. I mean, take the Patriots. Stephon Diggs killed him in the first meeting on October 5th. 10 catches and seemingly every single clutch catch, every single clutch play on third down was a result of the Patriots making a play in the pass game. The Bills are far better against the pass right now than they are against the run, and I would say that they're probably one of the better teams right now playing against the pass, so that's a credit to the coaching staff improving the players who are on the roster. And, of course, you know, we have to talk about some of the players getting healthier and things of that nature, and whatever the injuries have been. There have been many to the Bills' defense on the front seven. I will say, yes, in agreement with you, Jay, on the challenge on the in the first half. I'll say also that whether it's John Perry or McDermott himself successfully challenging the James Cook touchdown, you know, where he had to outstretch himself and reach the ball over the goal line and in real time. Easy to say this, but in real time, I thought he made it. But you don't know for sure. It was worth that challenge, certainly because you don't, hey, look, there's no guarantee that they're going to punch it in on the next play or whatever. So that's a plus for him. That's a plus on the W side for Sean McDermott. And of course, is this a question of, is this a bad game plan that he keeps getting the Bills into or starting the Bills off with? And that's a reason why they haven't had the lead, started a game with the lead since November 2nd when they played Kansas City, which seems like a long, long time ago, and it was. Or is it personnel? And they've had some issues with personnel in terms of guys being available and injured. And of course, you know, they've tried to address the front seven. Brandon Bean and presumably McDermott have tried to address the front seven with the draft, with players they were able to get within the confines of the salary cap. Larry Ogunjobi, you mentioned, Michael Hoyt, who of course, unfortunately, has been injured. Ed Oliver, the mainstay there, he of course, is injured. And so that's an issue with the defensive line and the run game and all that. The other thing, though, that I'll say, just sort of in conclusion, and this is sort of two sides of the coin. For all the criticism Sean McDermott has taken, and a lot of it is justified and justifiable, we're sitting here talking about a guy who has just led the Bills, who's just clinched his seventh consecutive 10-win season, or his seventh consecutive season of 10 or more wins. And they've got, after all this hand-wringing, out of all this, what's the word I'm looking at? You know, this sort of anxiety about, well, how worse off is this team? They certainly don't look as good as they did last year at this point. With all that having been said, they're 10-4, and if they win out, they're going to go 13-4, which is exactly the same record the Bills had last year. Now, they're not going to have the number one or number two seed, probably. Well, they're not going to have the number one or number two seed, barring a miracle, but it's a weird thing. The final analysis, of course, with Sean McDermott is he going to get Josh Allen and the Bills to the promised land, at least to the Super Bowl, as far as the franchise has ever been, or farther, to win the Super Bowl with the best player in franchise history, number 17. And that's the source of all this anxiety, right? You don't want to waste. This is the best player in franchise history. I think we'd all agree. And the reigning MVP at the height of his powers, as we've seen, are you going to waste his best years by not getting all the way to the top? And that's going to be the final analysis on Sean McDermott, no matter how you slice it.
Yeah, and I'm just going to add real quick. I know we're running a bit long in this segment. You're absolutely right. And so, you know, that determination doesn't come until January or possibly February if they get there. I wanted to just get off my chest the point you made about the replay and the use of replay assist and what a cluster that is for the league, because why is it that James Cook's touchdown doesn't get replay assist and the Bills are forced to use challenge flag? Why is it that a completion is, you know, overturned because of replay assist when Brandon Cooks is bobbling it at the sideline, but replay assist isn't used when Kayshon Boutte is making a 30-yard catch that very clearly, you know, maybe came in contact with the ground, and you see the Patriots hustling it up there? It's a bad look for the NFL if you're picking and choosing where replay assist is implemented. And the league needs to do a better job of explaining why it was used or why it wasn't used in those situations. Officials should be made more available to the media than they are in terms of having to request a pool report, which puts the reporter who is tasked with doing the pool report at a disadvantage because he has his job to do in going into the locker room after the game, and he only has a certain amount of time to do it, or she has a certain amount of time to do it, and then you're tasked with, you know, doing this call with the league that takes away from your other job. These are a lot of inside baseball complaints, I understand, but the use of replay assist in that game yesterday was a very big source of, it should be a source of frustration, not just for Bills fans. Heck, they won the game. It should be a source of frustration for the league because there was no consistency whatsoever in how replay assist was implemented in that game.
Okay, Jay, finally, let's talk about the playoff race. Actually, let's not start at the top. Let's start at the bottom. I'm going to guess that there was a fair amount of dancing, shimmying, two thumbs upping, however you want to put it, across Western New York late in the afternoon when everybody saw that the Kansas City Chiefs were officially eliminated and pushed out of the playoff picture. They lose, and so they're done. Their season is officially done. Of course, Patrick Mahomes, God bless him, he's suffers an ACL injury. Nobody wants to see that. And so they're going to have quite a bit of soul-searching to do in the offseason, and there will, of course, exist and remain questions about whether their sort of run at the top is done for good. On the other side, Denver Broncos, 12-2. They beat the Green Bay Packers, come up with a big win at home. The Patriots, of course, as you mentioned, Jay, are still 11-3. They're still in the driver's seat in the AFC East. And, of course, they've got a soft schedule, as they have had all year, to finish out. And so it's unlikely the Bills catch them. But as we stand now, the Bills certainly look like they're in great position to be able to lock in a playoff berth. They're at 10-4. As we stand now, as we talk here on Monday, they are sixth in the conference. And in between, how about Jacksonville, number three seed? Pittsburgh still hanging on to the NFC North, and the LA Chargers come up with a big win. They are 10-4 as well, with the Houston Texans at 9-5 rounding things out. Plenty to sort through with the AFC playoff picture. And again, it just sort of speaks, Jay, to something we've said almost all season. There's no one dominant team out there. So while the Bills are in danger, of course, of going on the road and losing in the first round and suffering a disappointing exit, early exit in the playoffs, in my opinion, they're just as likely to make it all the way because there's no team out there. There's no 07 Patriots out there looking like a buzzsaw that just can't be dealt with.
Yeah, I got a kind of a whole mess of thoughts here on this race. I think let's start with the Bills in the sense of what they would need to happen to clinch next week. And I believe it's as simple as a Bills win and a Colts loss. Now that can't happen until Monday night because I think Indianapolis plays on Monday night. But let's start there, right? Because you got to punch your ticket to the dance before we can really have any more of these conversations. After that, I'm looking at the standings. You've got Houston at the 7th seed right now. You're a game ahead of them. I think you want to stay there. I think Houston right now is projected to go to New England in the first round. I think the Bills would love that to happen, right? Get one of those two teams out of the picture. Then it becomes interesting right now because you've got Jacksonville at 3. The Jaguars are playing some pretty darn good football lately. I know the schedule is pretty soft for them, but you know, that's where you're going right now if you're the Bills in the first round. The 4th seed is Pittsburgh. Obviously, we're recording this early Monday afternoon. They've got a huge game against Miami on Monday night to maintain their spot atop the AFC North ahead of Baltimore, who won and is now 7-7. Pittsburgh 7-6. Pittsburgh would host the Chargers, who are 10-4. The Chargers are they're tied with the Bills in record at 10-4, but a game ahead in the conference at 8-2 versus 7-3. So that's why they get the 5 seed. If Pittsburgh holds on to the 4 seed, I think the 5 seed is ideal. Given the way that the Bills played against the Steelers earlier this year, you'd feel pretty good about that matchup. If Baltimore takes over the 4 seed, right? And the Ravens looked pretty good yesterday against the Bengals, then I think you might be okay with the 6 seed. You might say, I want no part of Lamar Jackson in the first round. So all of that is to say that this race can still unfold a lot of different ways, and it's a really interesting kind of standings as they sit right now. But I think the Bills would love, as I said at the start here, to see New England and Houston play in the first round as it currently projects. So next week, the Bills travel down the 90 West to Cleveland. They face the Browns, who have nothing to play for with the exception of potentially Myles Garrett setting the all-time single-season sacks record against Josh Allen, which I'm sure he would love to get against an elite quarterback like Josh Allen. Outside of Myles Garrett, though, the Browns obviously don't have much going for them. 3-11. The Bills, as I just mentioned, though, the simplest way to clinch a playoff spot is they win and the Colts lose. So still a lot to play for here as we go through the final 3 weeks of the regular season. Perrin and I will be back next Monday. That is the 22nd of December to discuss the Bills game against the Browns. And as we so often do, we'll size up the AFC playoff race after week 16, it will be, and then briefly look ahead to a pretty high-profile home game against the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions. So, for Perrin Keyes, the executive sports editor at the Buffalo News, my name's Jay Skursky. Thanks so much for watching the latest edition of the Further Review podcast.
This is Harry the Hammer for Further Review by House Crafters. House Crafters provides complete home renovation services with one call does it all. That includes interior home services as well as windows and doors. Call 716-646-NAIL.